building.
It's Saturday morning. This is different. Hello,
fun
everyone.
Saturday morning.
Everybody's fresh, ready to go. Had their cup of coffee. No,
I'm drinking coffee right now. True story.
Me too. Eric's probably not. He doesn't seem like a coffee drinker.
I've got orange juice, guys.
That's a fair replacement. Get your vitamin C. Get your vitamin goo. We didn't have a Friday episode because we said, let's not make one. Let's save it till Saturday because it's time to cover the last chapter of A Clash of Kings. This is a very, very monumentous and important moment because we are finally finishing this book we've been working on since the end of season three with all of you guys. And I'm just really excited to know that we've done two books now after today.
Wow. It's unbelievable. You know, I cannot believe it, but what's quite fitting is that I think
believe
you just combined.
It, Eric. Believe it.
You just combined
believe
two
it
words
yourself.
There, Zach. I think
Which
you
one?
Combined you combined monumental and momentous.
You like that?
With monumentous. And I was like, man, that's a great word for today.
Someone said something before we recorded. It was one of you two. This is something about just being fresh and ready to go. I think
that was
you,
me.
Micah.
Well, yeah. See, here's the thing, and we're not giving away any trade secrets here, but normally when we do record, if it's not on a Sunday, it's during the week and it's after several hours of work and commuting, at least on my end. So I was just remarking how much better it feels like doing a Saturday morning podcast. Like you're just fresh, you're ready to go. Maybe I'll say a few smart things, on this show as opposed
well,
to
counting,
others.
I'm counting, Micah, so you bet.
I hope no, I but, do too. You know, I really have good hopes for the rest of this podcast episode today.
Yeah.
For all of us.
You know who doesn't have to commute every day?
Who's that? Or
Bran Stark.
Oh, Brandon.
Bran, young little Bran, who's been in the same place for, is it months, do we think? It's weeks, at the very least, weeks. He's been down in this dark place where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. But he's alive.
He's alive.
I was just thinking about how this is not a very good situation. It's not optimal. You know, they've been down, bored probably. You know, they were saying that sometimes a fire is lit and they'll talk some, but for the most part, they've been sleeping because there's no real disruption between day and night, which I kind of think is a funny sort of look forward to what maybe people would feel like during the long winter and during the long night.
Right.
Quite possibly. I'm not sure if it's meant to really be a litmus of that kind of situation, but that's what they're living in now. But all I can think about is how much better that is than what it would be like dealing with the people that were inside of Winterfell, you know, of dying or going through those terrible things. Like, what a good trade-off, because now they can leave, or at least try to leave, and, you know, still have some time bought.
Yeah, it definitely begs the question, would Bran and Rickon be killed? I think probably not, but everybody else who is part of their party that's hanging out in the crypts underneath would definitely be. Hodor, Osha, and then Jojen and Mira, maybe those are questionable to have been killed, but certainly a good portion of their group, if they would have stayed on the surface, would have definitely, been killed either by Theon or by Ramsay Bolton.
Well, that's the real terror, is that had they stayed above ground, forget whether or not Theon would have killed them, but Ramsay would have had them to deal with, or would have been able to. What the hell is beeping?
I heard that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Something. Be is careful.
Yeah. Landmine.
Is it an oven?
Let me just. What are we playing? 20 questions with what is the beeping? I don't know what the source
is.
I can't
it still
answer
going?
That. No, it's done. Let me let me redo that.
No, that was great. That's the kind of content we want.
That's the real terrifying thing, is that forget what Theon would do, but Ramsay Bolton would have them by now. And who the heck knows what side he's on? So people,
he's on his own side.
Yeah. Our listeners keep insisting that he has nothing to do with the Greater Bolton. Mm-hmm. So
he's on the side of chaos.
Isn't there one point in the chapter when I forget who mentions it, but they're talking about just how they don't know who to trust anymore? Neighbor fighting neighbor, I think was a line that was used.
Mm, yeah, it's what black. Gray chaos, mad chaos, I think Bran said. What madness is this? It's because Asha points out they end up escaping from the crypt in this chapter. They've been hiding there, and now that Winterfell is burned, I would say to the ground, because a lot of the stone is still there, they go out and they're able to basically see that not only are their good Winterfell people dead, but Theon's men as well. And a fair bit of ironclad, not that there were a lot of them, I think what, there were only like 10 or 16 or something, iron men, but there are corpses there with arrows in them. And so Bran wants to blame Theon for all of this, and I think that is accurate. But Asha points out, well, no, some of his men got it too. So whoever did this is somebody else. And they know just based on the signs. I don't know if a guy is flayed, but they see
sigil.
Yeah, they saw it.
It was the sigil. So yeah. One of the men of the Dreadfort is dead, and you really don't know who you can trust.
Right. But ultimately, you can blame Theon for all of this, because had he not sacked Winterfell in the first place, there would be no Bastard of Bolton who came knocking on Winterfell's door.
Yeah, certainly
that could
be a
great rock song. Knock, knock, knocking out. Sorry, go on.
All I can think of is Paul McCartney. Somebody's knocking on the door.
There, you can mix the two things together.
Open the door, let him in. But, you know, not to jump to the end of the chapter, but regarding the idea that you can't trust anyone, Maester Luwin, bless his recently departed soul, is able to shed even more light and says, no, you can't go east. None of these people are cool anymore. They are fighting each other. They're all brother against brother. So I guess it was a quote from Maester Luwin, actually. But he instigates a plan that very interestingly is executed at the end of the third season of the TV show. But it's at the end of the second book where Bran and Rickon are separated.
It's a very tactical plan. You know, there wasn't much room for mourning. There wasn't much room for being sad. You know, he was still at the Heart Tree. This is still a very dramatic moment, much like it was in the show. I think in the show, the dramatics were elevated to a much higher level here than in the books, because we're faced with the brutal realism of the burning city, for one, of all of the devastation. We're faced with the brutal realism of losing this place. So when we see Maester Luwin in the Godswood, underneath the Heart Tree, he's belly down near the pool, and he's flipped over, and it's sad, and Hodor is saying Hodor sadly, and it's a moment of sadness. I know I keep saying that word, but what I mean to say is it's not accompanied by strings, as in the show, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not set up for us. Like,
it's
a
much lonelier death.
Yeah, it's much more real at the end of the day. That's what it is. Like, Luwin's basically like, I'm dying, woman. He says that to Osha because she says that they should build him a litter and carry him around like he was Daenerys Stormborn, which makes sense because if they could save him, they should, because there's no reason to count him out yet. He survived that long. I think there might have still been a chance, but to Bran's point, he brings up in the chapter, you know, when we get sick or when our family gets sick, we go to the Maester, but, you know, who does the Maester go to when he gets sick?
Osha's one-stop shop for everything, death.
And then she takes care of business.
It's such a I took a quick peek at some of the tweets that we got, and I noticed that somebody said, and we'll read them a little bit later on, that, you know, that moment in the show was one that, aside from the Red Wedding, that they teared up at. And, you know, I think I even mentioned on the show, or I should say the podcast, when we were going through that episode, that, you know, I got a little, you know, choked up a little bit myself.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that. We made fun of you.
Well, because he's just one of those characters that's such a pillar of Winterfell and of the Stark family. And, you know, it's just another really member of the foundation of what the Starks have grown up with that they now lose. I mean, they lost their father. They lose Roderick. You know, they lose several other men down in King's Landing. And now they're losing Maester Luwin. And so all of those people who have been so important to them, especially for young characters like Bran and Rickon,
right,
and now they're off on their own, traveling and going who knows where. And this is such a stark difference from the show. And you guys mentioned it earlier, where they part at the end of season 3. And here we are at the end of A Clash of Kings, and they're going their separate ways as they leave Winterfell. You know, Rickon going with Osha, and then Mira, Jojen, and Hodor going with Bran. So now we're at a place where the heirs to Winterfell are, you know, moving about Westeros and with Bran, obviously, we know where he's going. But with Rickon, who knows?
That was my point with the reality of the scene, though, Micah. And I think it makes a lot of sense because, you know, in the show, like I said, it was sad and string accompanied, and we kind of had to feel out the story. I don't think it would have made a lot of sense in the context that they were painting that scene. Lewin would just get down to business so quickly. But here in the book,
right,
you know, immediately their minds were to, okay, at the end of the day, all of this stuff is happening, but we need to protect the Stark bloodline. And we most importantly need to protect these boys. So split up. If something bad, the heart tree forbid, that bad thing happen, they'll be split up.
The very interesting thing about it is that Maester Lewin's exact words are Rob's heirs. No two in the same place. Rob's heirs. He's not saying Ned's heirs. He says Rob's heirs. So that's like if something should happen to Rob, then somehow the bloodline is going to his brothers. But is that because they're Ned's sons or because they were Rob's youngest brothers? Like, I don't.
There's no son of Rob right now to who would, by succession, take over, right? Mm-hmm. Because Rob is the oldest son. So any son that he had would take over Winterfell before Bran or Rickon. But since that's not the case, Bran would be the next in line.
Well, they're still Ned's heirs, but I guess Maester Lewin wasn't thinking clearly due to a gaping wound in his side.
On a more technical level, you're right, because they're not technically Rob's heirs, but on a sense of the royalty and who's leading Winterfell, you know, as when Rob left, Bran took over, you know, so right. Rob's heirs to the kingdom and to command rather than like in a literal DNA sense.
It was really cool tactic how in the TV show they delayed pretty much everything about Bran's green sight. I mean, not exactly because the Three-Eyed Raven was like in the second episode, but, you know, in terms of actually explaining it. And with the Reeds, they weren't even introduced until season 3. So they managed to expand the Bran and Rickon storyline through all of season 3. And, you know, because they didn't part words until the very end of that tearful windmill scene or wherever they were, really kind of gave an extra season to have these revelations about the green sight and about foreshadowing, about warging, all that stuff that really in the book comes at you pretty quickly.
How do you think it feels versus the book? Because I think now that we've sort of gotten further along into the development of the book storyline with Jojen and Mira, because that's something you guys always wrote into us and mentioned, and we've always sort of known just by talking about it internally that it's much different than in the show. Obviously, Jojen and Mira meet Bran much earlier, and like I said, we're a good chunk into that. Like, how I kind of feel like there's enough happening in Bran's storyline where it was okay to sort of stretch it out and to move it in there, because just the stuff going on in Winterfell is drama enough, you know, without all of the stuff with his warging happening so early on as well.
It's weird as hell, and please quote me on that in the future, how this chapter in particular, being the summing up chapter of the book, how much George wanted to clearly show us that Bran is now an expert warger. There's a line in here when he comes awake from the dream that he's having where it says he closed his third eye and opened his other two. It's just very matter of fact. It's like, poof, poof, he can do it now. And it even says that the darkness helped Bran to really move and be able to warg instantly into his wolf, because his wolf, of course, is above ground, and that's where all the excitement really lays and stuff. But Bran now, we're meant to understand that he's really friggin' good at warging. In fact, he's become almost addicted to it. They do mention, the Reeds mentioned that he was out of it for 3 days as the chapter began, and they've had to feed him. And you know, water his human body because he's not taking care of it.
Did you eat, Bran?
He's got a whole horse.
Yeah, it's like you didn't eat, your wolf ate. But I kind of feel like maybe it's a placebo hunger effect. Like he's just, you know, getting nutrients off of those reserves while his wolf gets eat all that delicious food.
I just think of like the Matrix where, I guess in the Matrix you would get a placebo, wouldn't you? Or you would, maybe the machines are taking care of you.
I just think it's a really great piece of writing, just how the chapter opens and the fact that you're seeing everything now through Summer's eyes and that you're able to witness what, you know, this direwolf is really seeing, tasting, smelling. And, you know, then as you guys, you know, we're talking about, Bran wakes up and the difference from the show is that, you know, Maester Luwin sees Osha, you know, running at a different times. I think there was maybe like one or two, you know, she's going into the kitchens and taking food and bringing it back down. But, you know, we don't really know if she's been doing that at all. For all we know, they've been locked down there since day one. And, you know, who knows when this boulder or piece of stone has fallen on top of this door. We would assume probably within the last few days, but you know, we really don't know how they've been sustaining. You know, Bran mentions at one point how they stink, because they haven't showered or done anything. I don't really know that the Reeds ever really shower, but
surely
swamp kids.
But you get a sense of what, you know, the real dire straits that they've been in and what they've had to do in order to stay alive. And I just thought a lot of the history that you got, you know, as they were walking out of the crypts and they were passing all of these Starks that have served some good, some not so good. But the fact that, you know, Osha and Bran and Mira were arming themselves with swords of those who had previously passed.
Yeah. You know,
it was such a rite of passage in a way.
I get it, right? Equipping yourself. It's a dangerous world out there. But aren't those swords supposed to keep the dead dead at peaceful rest? You know, I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't be cool to have an army of undead or reliving Starks.
Fight for me.
come after them. But I think it would be like the what are the words for the Ringwraith's original?
The Nazgul?
Nazgul. Don't they? I mean, they just want one thing. And in this case, it would be their swords back. So I don't know how smart that is. But really, the coolest thing is that where they chose to set up their little camp and all their reserves was inside the, or right around the unused tomb for Ned. And Ned Stark's likeness is there. And it looks sad as they're leaving. But that's kind of where they set up. And I don't know if any of them really slept in the space where the body's supposed to go, but they could have. And this is kind of, that's the area specifically in the crypts where they were hiding, which I thought was very cool.
I felt the future of Bran in the moment when they were walking through and he was recounting the kings of old, not just the lords of the north, you know, the lowly lords. It said something along the lines of that, but these were the true kings in the north, these legendary men. And I was thinking about how he was saying one day he knows this is where he's going to belong. And I was just, you're right, it was like a rite of passage. It was almost inspirational in a way where they're taking these swords and they're doing what's necessary. Like, of course they didn't want to rob the graves in a sense, but you know, this is a dangerous moment for they've been hiding in a crypt for the love of God. You know what I mean? Like they're doing what they can to survive. So they took the weapons that they had to take or whatever. But I was just thinking about sort of life and where Bran is in his part of life and how he's young, but still building his story, you know, with his injuries and with the messed up situation and with what his family's dealing with, his group of people now, you know, what they're choosing to do and what a ragtag crew it is. His crazy little brother, Hodor, that's all you have to say, because this is one of the greatest Hodor chapters, probably the best so far. Can we agree?
I would agree.
Just him, lots of really great writing, and George really taking advantage of the writing medium and using just enough scant comedy with Hodor, you know, and really dramatic moments, just even with Maester Luwin, just the bold like Hodors and shit like that. Like he did a really good job of mixing the comedy with the dramatics in this chapter, and it was just brilliantly done.
Here's a good example of that, and it does lead into what I think is the best Hodor moment. It says, "And in the mouth of the empty tomb that waited for Lord Eddard Stark, beneath his stately granite likeness, the six fugitives huddled around their little cache of bread and water and dried meat. Little enough left," Asha muttered as she blinked down on their stores. "I'd need to go up soon to steal food in any case, or we'd be down to eating Hodor." "Hodor," Hodor said, grinning at her. That's him like saying, "Try it, bitch." Like, it totally is.
Yeah, they lucky for them, this friend of theirs, like I said, this ragtag crew of people, what a match, building their futures together, and who knows where their story and destinies take them. Hodor just so happened to be there and just so happened to be burly enough to take care of the tomb door and what was blocking it, which appears to be a large mass of stone, a boulder. Let's just agree that it was very heavy, whatever it was.
It was very Christian as well. It's very Easter-like, you know, the resurrection coming out of the tomb, moving the boulder.
I feel like that's maybe level 9 reading into it just a little bit, but at the same time, you never know. You know what I mean? Like the symbolism is there and it could be anything, but at the end of the day, it could just be a boulder, but that's up for the reader to decide.
Yeah. I just think Bran has grown and is now transubstantial. He's able to be like, he wargs like in a heartbeat. He's just like, they're like, is it light outside? What time of day is it? And he's like, hang on, let me check my third eye. He blinks and he's like, yep, totally light out. It's day right now. That would creep me out. But again, about his power, like it even says that he went to Ghost and had a conversation with John, who also in this book we learned can warg. This particular storyline regarding the warging is so far ahead of where the show is. It's if John and Bran are communicating, that's something completely different.
Right.
Although that particular quote, it said Bran thought it could have been a dream.
Well, it wasn't. So
it was. Okay.
Well, no. I mean, look, we know from the previous or several chapters ago with John that he mentions thinking he saw Bran. So clearly, there's a strong connection going on here between all of them that have direwolves. So I don't think that saying that it was real is a stretch.
No.
Yeah, I wasn't on that episode. So when I think about John and Bran, I'm just like, oh, damn, I haven't got to talk about that yet. And I'm not going to. There's more to come. I'm just saying, like, not to stray off the point. That is crazy that
it is.
He even thought
it
about
is.
It again.
And so we were touching on this a little bit before the show, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, which we had the first book that ended with Daenerys, and now we have the second book, which has ended with Bran.
Bran is the new Danny.
Branny.
He may Branny. Yes, he may very well be. But here's my question is, how do you think they compare? You know, the second season ended with Sam and the White Walkers, which we did not see, you know, in this book. But I'm curious as to what you all think with how this book has come to a close now with Bran venturing out. And, you know, he makes that note, Winterfell is not really dead, it's just broken, which is kind of like him, which I thought was really cool.
Well, just in terms of the title, A Clash of Kings, we did in this book see kings clash. And the fact that this Winterfell being burned, or they're going through the rubble, the smoky rubble, there's charred man flesh all around them, really shows the consequences of such clashing of kings. Of course, Theon wasn't a king, and the Bastard of Bolton isn't a king, so there's fighting going on that's extra kinglier. But, you know, Renly's dead. Renly and Stannis clashed. Stannis and the Lannisters clashed. Luckily, both survived. So I think that really it's just about kind of transitioning, that things are still going on in the background. Because if you think of what a revelation the dragons coming back into the world were at the end of book one, and that's what made the ending of book one so cool. Now you get a very muted kind of walking through the rubble of what these men have caused, second ending to a book in the series. But at the same time, Bran is now fluent in warging, and you just kind of, you're like, where the hell is this going? But it all points to a magical world that people aren't quite prepared for en masse.
En masse. And I thought about magic so much at the beginning of this chapter, looking just, you know, you think maybe he's just warging into a wolf who's upstairs in Winterfell, because you know that they're downstairs in the crypts,
right,
as it were. But no, he looks up into the sky and sees a giant winged snake. And I love that description of a dragon, because you could just say it's a dragon. And by the proper noun and growing up in the world we have grown up in, we all know, we got an idea of what it looks like. Is it a worm, much like Smaug? Is it long and skinny? We really don't know. There's different kinds of dragons. But in this description, he looks up and sees a giant winged snake blowing out a river of fire, a river in the air of fire.
That's definitely precognitive. And did you guys catch that? I guess it's different, Mikey. You mentioned how in the show he sees Asha, or whatever her name is. He sees Tonks going and grabbing some food, you know, in the show. But in the book, he actually says, when Bran comes to him, he says, he knows he's not dreaming. I expected a moment where Lewin's like, oh, I'm near death. Of course I would see the boys I cared for. But no, he's totally like sober. And he's just like, I knew you guys were still alive because the boys that Theon picked slash cooked had stronger leg muscles or legs that appeared to have worked up until the moment of their death. So he knew, but still pretended not to know that Bran was alive, which is actually great relief because we see this character, and this is why Lewin's death is so sympathetic. I think we've seen the torture that he's had to endure, believing that these boys were killed, you know, having to still try and mentor Theon after Theon went off the rails and attacked Winterfell, and all this stuff is like, you really were shooting for this guy and he went through a lot. It's like playing with your food before you eat it. Like, now he succumbs to his wounds, but it's sad that he wasn't. Yeah, but it's the death he chose, ultimately. He's like, I'm older than you, Bran. I can die as I like. And it's just, it is a heroic death in a way, which I think has to get my own for the chapter.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and I think that the show was a bit different. You didn't get to see the attack of Ramsay's men. You didn't get to see necessarily as much of the aftermath, sort of the complete and utter destruction. You know, there's that scene with Hodor taking Bran in a wheelbarrow and seeing Winterfell in the background, you know, completely destroyed and on fire. And you're left to wonder Theon's fate as well. I mean, we don't see him necessarily, you know, in this field of bodies that the ragtag crew come across, but who knows what his fate is. Obviously, we do because of the show, but we're getting into a territory now, especially as we head into A Storm of Swords, where there are going to be things that we're going to know because we're reading, as opposed to what's been put on television. And I think that that makes it exciting. It's, you know, it's scary in a way, I'm sure, for you guys, because you're not sure what you're going to find with each turn of the page. But that's why I enjoy so much going through these books with both of you, because the realization and the information that you get from reading a book is so much different than what you'll get from watching a TV show. And that's not any fault of the people who make the TV show. There's just only so much that you can put in there, and you got to change things because it makes them work, you know, for a viewing audience. But I'm really excited about wrapping up this book and heading into A Storm of Swords. And, you know, much like how the book opened when we were, you know, even at the close of A Game of Thrones, you know, we're introduced in magic coming back into the world. And in the opening of A Clash of Kings, we get Melisandre, who is clearly up to no good. And we see a lot of her and the Red God throughout the course of this book. And then really, though, for Bran in this last chapter, it's an awakening of sorts. You know, the fact that, you know, Eric, you mentioned it a couple times, that he can really warg on a dime. You know, magic has really resurfaced throughout the course of this book. It's kind of an underlying theme. It's not just the battle or the clash of all these kings. It's that there's another force that's being introduced, and it's going to play a major, major role moving forward.
Well, I hope so, because then that means that characters like Bran and Jon Snow will play a major, major role going forward.
Should they survive, yes.
Well, otherwise they have to introduce other warging characters, and that's not cool.
It's been a very Lannister-driven, you know, kind of story so far, at least where the show is concerned. And that's where a lot of the action is. You know, a lot of this stuff hasn't quite panned out yet, and they chose to slow some things down because I think that a slow burn is a good payoff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, Eric, you gave your own. Zach, what about you?
This is a tough call because in this chapter, we got to see, like I said, some really incredible Hodor moments. And I think it's just something we're not used to seeing, because I think in the show, if you're Unsullied, you're kind of supposed to think that this person's funny and that it's a fan favorite, and you don't really know why, other than the fact that this guy just says Hodor, and it's just a character that just says Hodor, and that's fine. But I think this chapter did a really good job of like showing me what those people that were already four books in, five books in, were so excited about when the first season came out and they got to see this character on screen. There was a just huge dialogue moment where he's just yelling Hodor, and there's different variations of caps and uncaps and exclamation marks. You know what I mean? You just got to read the chapter yourself. It's hard to describe something like that. And if we were to read that out loud, it would be the most ridiculous thing we've recorded in 190 something episodes, so we'll spare you from that. But he doesn't get my own. That was really great. And he lifted the door. But you're strong. That's what you do. That's, you know.
Wow.
Okay. Let's not be impressed. All right. I think I'm going to have to give my own to Maester Luwin. I'm going to give my own to Maester Luwin. He made the strong decision at the very end. I think that he previously would have said, Bran, you're not going anywhere. Just like he kind of was always never really in a big fan of his skills and what he was doing at night, nor his new friends, nor his ideas of what was going to come in the future. But now that he is on his back, on his stomach, mortally wounded, now that he's seen the destruction of Winterfell by people that he thought was their friends or at least allies in some sort, we're seeing Maester Luwin treat Bran and the rest of them like sort of equal people that he's not counseling and trying to give the best advice to. But at the same time, he is, and he's pushing them in the right direction, not the safe direction. So I think for that, he's even more wise in his last moments than he was during the moments we got to sort of read him through in the story. So he gets my own for propelling the storyline of multiple characters forward single-handedly.
I would agree with that. And, you know, really, I was thinking we're being so sympathetic to him. He didn't even believe that Bran could really warg. He doesn't believe in warging. He doesn't believe in the green sight. You know, his whole life, he doesn't do it. And I really thought, what if, you know, Bran at this moment, sort of the last thing Maester Luwin sees, Bran's like, here, you know, Papa, see me, do this. And he like wargs into his wolf and like does a flip or a trick or something and comes back out. Because wouldn't the natural boy instinct be like, I want to show this guy that I was right all along? But I guess the mood is, it's just too somber. But seeing as how easily Bran could do it, I think that's a missed opportunity to just show Maester Luwin that, hey, before you die, this world is expanding. Look what I can do. Like, this kind of stuff is here. And just to see what Maester Luwin, who knows all of Old Man's stories, would as a man of science, would say about that. You know, it'd be a nice show to put on for him before he died. But still, I think both of us, the fact that Zach and I both gave our own to Maester Luwin shows that he just was that character. He was that pillar.
Yeah, I will then not give my own to to Maester Luwin.
Better not give it to Bran.
See what you got.
Though Bran, you know, I will say the fact, I don't know if he came up with the plan or if it was really Osha's to, you know, circle back and go down to the crypts. And he mentions it to Maester Luwin at one point, and the fact that he sent Summer and Shaggy Dog off to, you know, kind of lead them on a false trail. I thought that was a pretty good tactic on his part. Because remember who he's working with here. You know, Rickon's not going to come up with that stuff. Hodor doesn't say anything other than Hodor. So, you know, it was probably a plan that was crafted between himself, Osha, and then the Reeds. So I'm going to give my own to Winterfell. How about that?
Go on with this,
I'm going to read. I'm going to read what's the final couple sentences. It includes Bran, but then again, it's from his perspective. It's from his perspective. I don't go that route that Eric likes to go sometimes, well, all the time, which is not giving it to the point of view character. But in a way, this is Winterfell's. It says, "Beyond the tops of the keeps and towers still stood as they had for hundreds of years, and it was hard to tell that the castle had been sacked and burned at all. The stone is strong," Bran told himself. "The roots of the trees go deep, and under the ground the kings of Winter sit their thrones. So long as those remained, Winterfell remained. It was not dead, just broken. Like me," he thought. "I'm not dead either."
End. I mean, that speaks volumes to the tenor of the end of the book, and it leads us into our next, and the wait. Is not as unbearable as what most of you had to go through, what some of you had to go through.
Those are our owns, and there were quite a few to be chosen from. You could have given it to Summer for backing down Shaggy Dog and getting his eat on, right? So
that was a good scene.
Yeah, it was actually pretty funny. But I know we have a bunch of owns that were sent in. Eric has been monitoring the Twitterverse and Facebook
verse.
I don't know. Facebook verse. Yeah. So
that's the worst thing, but it works.
Yes. Well, you know, first we got an own. We asked for owns, obviously, for this chapter, but the first one that came in was from Aaron Hutchinson, who says, "Can my own go to Game of Owns for completing the book? Well done, guys, and can't wait for you to start reading Storm of Swords."
I'll take an own. Sure.
Yeah. yeah, we'll take that.
Why not?
And you know, Jack McGraw had a similar idea. He said, I'll give my final book own. Final book own. Okay, we're not going to do that this episode, but Jack McGraw says, I'll give my book own to
You've already Zach, said his name, so you have to.
Yeah. Zach and Eric for resisting the urge to jump ahead and start Storm of Swords already.
ASOS.
And having said that, go ahead and get to it. I've got owns lined up for days on my new Audible audiobook version of A Storm of Swords. The bookmark feature is choice. So somebody who's been using Audible.
Jack, do you work at Audible? You trying to give us a hint?
I don't know. But Moira Siobhan. Finnegan, Micah, agrees with you and gives her own much the same. She says, the whole last paragraph owned, the Starks might appear to be defeated, but this is a reminder that they still have a fighting chance. Okay.
What do you think about that, Micah?
I think it was more just the fact that Bran was able to take a look at Winterfell and see that it was not completely destroyed. It was just broken, similar to how he is from a physical standpoint. And, you know, it was building strength for him as he was moving on, you know, and said, you know, as he even tells his father as he's leaving that it's time for him to go. And where that's going to lead him, we don't know, but we know that this character is extremely important to the series. And I think Maester Luwin, despite his scientific background, knows how important Bran is, not just from an heir standpoint, but I think he knows that there's something very special about Bran. And even though he may not want to admit to his ability to warg, you know, he knows Bran. You know, and just like he knew it wasn't him that was hanging when Theon returned from the hunt, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he knew that there was more to Bran than met the eye, or, you know, that there was some truth to the stories, these dreams that he was having.
Well, you know, there's something to that, because when Bran is leaving towards the very end of the chapter, he sees the gargoyles that are smashed to bits.
Yep.
Exactly where he fell, and he wonders, man, how am I still even alive?
He's like, damn, that was, that's some shit. Look at them. They're busted into pieces.
Yeah. He's like, it's a miracle. I just lost my legs, you know? It's like,
it's your weight, buddy.
That's right.
So,
and at least in the show, it looks like you landed on some soft grass.
Very green.
It had rained the day before. It was kind of muddy. So
Kentucky bluegrass, just right on set. Sod.
Back to listener owns. Sure. Jen Wyman says, my own goes to Hodor for opening the crypt door, despite all the stone on top of it. Without Hodor, the others would not have gotten out.
Do you mean like the others, or just the others? Is this some kind of weird thing?
There's some reference to the others in this chapter. Did you guys catch that? It was something about wolves. It was not all wolves have four legs or something. They were like, we got to get out of here for the other wolves. And Asha was like, uh-huh.
I thought they were just referring to human beings.
Like people, yeah.
Yeah, people.
Dude, Eric, let me just say, if you were suggesting that some others would be like, well, Winterfell's down, we might as well go down there and see who's there, that would be scary.
Well, yeah, it's scary. That's the whole point. It was harking back more to a quote in the beginning of the chapter when Bran's still a wolf, and it says that there's no beast as loud as man. And I just thought, well, fuck. For anybody, like, if man is ever hunted by anything... anything, just throwing that out there. If something's out there hunting man is fucked because they're loud. And so when he said wolves, I was like, they mean others.
Keep dreaming, Eric. Keep dreaming.
But Micah, you mentioned this comment from Karen Smith. When Maester Luwin died was the only time I have cried at a TV series apart from the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
And actually, we said that was all on Twitter, but that was all on Facebook.
Whoops.
Whoops. Sorry, everybody scrawled upon our
same
wall.
Social media world.
Those were all of our Facebook responses to this chapter. Now we go over to Twitter.
It's all the same thing. I mean, let's be honest here.
I know. It's listener submitted owns. Here we go. Part two. Jill G., whose Twitter is Gothy J on Twitter. My own for the last chapter goes to Bran for not being dead. I really thought he was killed when I read the first book.
When I first read the book.
First read the book, sorry. What's that
called?
Yeah,
that's important, though, too. I mean, this is the first time we're hearing from Bran since, the chapter where he's hunted down by Theon. So, you know, it's important for readers to have gotten to this point, because I remember when I was reading the book for the first time, I think I've mentioned this before, like, I flipped ahead. Like, I don't know, like, what happened to Bran? Like,
I flipped shit. And
I flipped shit, yeah.
Threw the book across the room, started spilling.
I've done it actually, you know, in all fairness, like, I've done it when I'm almost 100% sure that the character is actually still alive. And I think, you know, I've mentioned it with Arya as well. There's a moment in season three that takes place just prior to her arriving at, or actually just after her arrival at the Red Wedding. With the Hound, and so much is left to be found out. And so I haven't done it, you know, with other characters, but those two, you know, it's like when it's your favorite character, you want to make sure that, hey, wait, do they have a point of view chapter, like a couple hundred pages, 150 pages from now? Because George likes to do that stuff, and you never know, like when he says, and then it went black, or, you know, the person felt the whatever it was, you know, it's like, okay, well, are they still alive, or like, are they not coming back anymore? Like, Ned was pretty concrete.
Ned was concrete. Wasn't Ned concrete? Ned was so concrete.
Unless Varys switched him out beforehand and he's coming back in the later books.
What is this, Sherlock? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
exactly,
you never know.
Right.
Varys is one crafty eunuch.
Yeah, he is. He's a very crafty eunuch.
So, just wrapping up, listener owns, we have three left. Not
Let's
Dan H. Don't know who this is. Not Dan H. Said, Owen goes to Maester Luwin, the Obi-Wan Kenobi of A Song of Ice and Fire.
That's good.
If that's true, I really hope we get some otherworldly, like, Ghost Ben for Maester Luwin.
You're right.
Leslie Burress says, there is no other way to go. Owen for the final chapter of book two is for Maester Luwin, the voice of reason in chaos and devastation.
I'll give you that. That's a good
we
one.
We all agree that Maester Luwin went out with a bang very strongly. And Nicole says, final Owen of A Clash of Kings to Summer for the vision of the dragon, quote, whose roar was a river of flame, end quote. Question, can dire wolves see the future? Well, we've been envisioning this epic battle when Dany's dragons finally cross, I wanted to say the strait, it's a huge frickin' ocean, you know, and get over here that they're going to have the White Walkers to deal with. It makes sense that a dragon may be seen flying over Winterfell at some point, being the main passage to the wall. Not that they need to take the roadways to get up to the wall. You know what I'm saying.
They use the air, generally speaking, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's what I've heard about dragons.
But seeing a dragon over Winterfell, I think that could be prophetic.
I thought that, you know, there was a couple things there that came into my mind. One I thought about was, okay, well, it's just a, you know, sort of a piece of Winterfell that's flying through the air that's been broken and busted. And the other was the comet. You know, we talked about that on the last episode. Would we ever hear about it again? And
oh.
You know, I thought of the comet when I read that quote, but... you know, certainly, you guys both brought up dragons, and Nicole has as well. And so there could be a very, very good chance that he could be seeing something that will take place in the future.
I love how we're convinced that this will happen, you know, like that Dany's going to inevitably make it over with her army of freed slaves and people that are just like, she's the real deal, man. We've known people for a while, but she's really nice to us.
She's taking a little bit of time, I'm telling you. You know, not to put a cramp in anybody's style who's reading these books or watching the show. She's taking her time.
Yeah.
Come on, Dany. Speed things up.
Well, somebody took her dragons, Micah. Do you not realize somebody took her dragons? That's
not her. No one took her damn dragons, all right? No one did. She misplaced them and caused all that shit for no reason.
She's not a very good mother.
She's a great mother. What are you talking about?
She misplaced her dragons? Come on, man.
You know, it's hard to keep up with three.
Yeah,
let's be real here. I mean,
okay,
most people have to deal with
one. I'm sure I would lose a child.
Let's move on to the next one. We're questioning Dany's mothership skills.
Okay. Well, let's move on to email here. Zach, we did get one that we thought was worth sharing.
Here's an email. I'm going to read it. Here it goes. My own for the last chapter goes to the Stone Lords in the Winterfell Crypts for giving Bran courage. He couldn't see them in the darkness, but he knew they were there. It goes on to say, congrats on finishing A Clash of Kings. Listening to the podcast three times a week really helps me get through waiting for the next season and waiting for the next book. And from a first-time owner, but long-time listener, Annette, winky face. Thanks, Annette.
I'm glad we've gotten to the point where they can say long-time listener.
That's weird.
Almost 200 apps.
Oh, dude.
We're old. We're getting old. We're getting up there.
Yeah, that's strange. I still want to, like, you know, party and make really bad decisions. I'm going to keep doing that.
I'm pretty sure it's acceptable. Our generation now does that. Well, guys, that I think is it. There'll be plenty more discussion to happen regarding the end of this book. But I think for this chapter episode, we should leave things pretty much right here.
So those are all the way to contact us, twitter.com/GameOfOwns, facebook.com/GameOfOwns, and instagram.com/GameOfOwns. I know a lot of cool stuff going on over there. You can also email us, like we just got one from Annette, and you can do that at contact@GameOfOwns.com. The other way that you can get in touch with us is on iTunes by leaving a rate and review. We are now in the month of February. Which, guess what, guys?
The best month.
It is the best month.
It really is.
It's the shortest one. So that doesn't, though, preclude you from rating it 5 stars, because nothing less than that is acceptable. Just like TKO763, I'll read his or her review because it's very quick and to the point. They say, "I love Goo. This is by far the best podcast ever. For those of us who are biting our nails waiting for season 4, this is our Game of Thrones fix. Goo forever." So thank you to TKO763. Just like him or her, you can leave us your feedback. Wow. Maybe mornings aren't the best.
Yeah. No, I like it. It feels good.
Micah, you're deprived. You're vitamin goo deficient. You got to get some of this.
Must be. And then, of course, check out winteriscoming.net and leave us some comments over there. We do go through and read them, and we do at times share them on the show, as well as hypeable.com. As mentioned on the last show, I did post an article over there from the exhibition, which has its last day actually today, February 1st in New York, but it is headed to other cities around the world. So if you want to read what to expect, we'll drop a link in the show notes. How does that sound?
Sounds great. We're going to hyperlink it up and you guys can mouse over or touch it with your fingertips. That's how the internet works.
We're looking forward to jumping into a Storm of Swords. We'll figure out when we're going to do that and what lies ahead before season 4 debuts on April 6th. Yeah, we got a lot of fun things in store. We're working on a lot of different projects and other things. So I think, you know, even though the chapter has closed on this book, there's a lot of other exciting stuff ahead. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, on behalf of all of us, from the bottom of our hearts, we're real people, and we really just went through this entire book with all of you. And so this is really important. You know, the second book is finished. A Clash of Kings is over. That was the final chapter. We are preparing for what is to come next, and we could not be more thrilled that you, listening person, you will be hanging out with us the entire time. So we say so long, and other people's names, which is... that's Eric.
That was Zach.
And I guess that makes me Micah. So, well. Everybody,
that was the appearance right there.
There you go. You promised it. It was long foretold.
We got the quota in.
There he was. I missed that guy.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
of course I do.
I hope it was worth the wait, people.
We're gonna get back together in 2014, Eric. Make amends.